Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror. Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here, the Wrestle Horror Podcast. With me, as always, my co-host, Donnie Hoover. Donnie, what is going on today?
Oh, man, what's happening? I'm just hanging out with the fellas tonight and doing some wrestling talk.
Well, I'm looking forward to some wrestling talk. Joining us is the new Ohio Wrestling play-by-play, John Orlando. John, how are you this evening?
I'm doing all right. I can't complain. Yourself, Jim?
Doing well. You know, I can't complain. I'm employed, and we're doing a podcast, so I'm happy. Joining us on this episode of Wrestle Horror is the Golden Idol, Mark Koval. Mark, how are you tonight?
Man, I'm doing good. I mean, what's better? I'm on a Zoom podcast show, hanging out, just got done having dinner. It's a beautiful day. Doing good.
Well, the skies look great there in Minnesota.
No, so. I'm in your backyard. I'm in Ohio.
Oh, you're in Ohio. Okay. Well, the skies still look great.
That's right. It's a great day. So it's a good. When it's not gray in Ohio, it's a great day, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, Donnie, you want to kick off this with Mark?
We just want to give everybody a little background about yourself. I know you've been in the business a while, and we've sat down to dinner, you know, many times and had some conversations. So, won't you give everybody your story on who the Golden Idol is?
And every time we sit down for dinner, I got to pay for it. Thanks a lot, Donnie.
Damn right.
The background on the Golden Idol. I got to say, I'm probably approaching 30 years. Started out with Eddie Sharkey's Pro Wrestling America. Eddie was my trainer. You know, a lot of people know Eddie. For those who don't, Eddie was the guy that brought in the Road Warriors, the Steiners, Rick Rude. Oh, my God. Medusa. I mean, the list goes on. Eddie was probably, back in those days, the greatest trainer around. Everybody came out of Minnesota. He had a little hand in Curt Hennig, Rick Rude. So a lot of great people came out of Eddie's camp. Jerry Lynn. X-Pac, Sean Waltman. So, and that's kind of when I started, when maybe about a year before Sean Waltman had come up to us. And so we did, coming out of Eddie's camp, we did a lot of cross promotion with AWA. So I got to, you know, I broke in the business with Baron Von Raschke and Sheik Adnan LKC and Nick Bockwinkel and all those guys. That was right at the end, pretty much, of the AWA, and they were doing a lot of Pro Wrestling America work. So a little crossover with the AWA for about almost a year, little behind the scenes. And then as we started taking over their live shows, you know, working with Larry Zbysko and folks like that were still AWA guys and just kind of crossing over. So and then I would say some point, maybe 5 years into it, I decided to get out, get married, and have a family, and stayed away for a long time and came back about 7 years ago, bought into Steel Domain. I bought out another wrestling group and, you know, brought it all back, brought back the Golden Idol from the dark depths of somewhere.
From somewhere.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Vern?
Who? Vern? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm still friends with Greg Gagne. I was just with him. We were bringing Ken Anderson in for the Arnold, and I was driving Donnie crazy because we were supposed to get some kind of promos for him. And the last time I saw Greg, we showed up at the camp. And I said to Donnie, man, Ken ain't showing up again, but Greg was running the camp. So Greg gave me a few little opportunities back in the AWA days. I turned out to be a manager. I tried to wrestle at 400 pounds, and that was a complete failure. But they did give me a couple matches here and there, and I did some some work for them, you know, around the ring and under a hood and, you know, just some fun stuff to fill in, but nothing much. But I knew Greg and Vern, you know, Greg much better.
Okay. Okay. Did you ever get to go out to the house? Because the house was always, from what I hear, like the coolest house out there on the lake.
You know, when I came aboard, it was right at the end of that era.
Oh, so the house was gone already?
Yeah, Vern was, you know, the city of Wayzata, Lake Minnetonka area. They came in and bought out his land from him. And I think at that point, I want to say he was living in Eden Prairie. But, yeah, I was right at that end. But I did get to see... I did get to see the stained glass that they had in the house with Vern and, you know, a lot of the cool things that they did have. So just through people I knew.
Okay. Cool.
Well, you mentioned you did a little bit of wrestling and then you went into managing and stuff. Who was your toughest, like, people to work with? You know, like if you had to go to manage every time, every now and again, a manager has to take one for the team. So,
yeah.
So who was your worst?
you know, I got to tell you, it was, of course, you know, Adnan L. Casey's the one that put me in the business. So I worked with Adnan a lot. I worked with Ken Patera a lot. As far as guys I managed, Jerry Lynn and X-Pac and, you know, just that whole group. And I got to tell you, it was a whole different time than I think it is today. They were all awesome. They were all great to work with. I did have to get in the ring several times. We had this guy, still around, great guy, Vietnam vet. His story paralleled the movie Born on the 4th of July. And we did a whole segment on that where, you know, I'd go on TV and say that we lost the Vietnam War and pissed off a lot of veterans. So we had a lot of heat in Minnesota, and the TV station got a lot of heat. But Tommy Farrar was a real true tough guy, and he was so stiff in the ring that I'd go back down to the locker room and from his chops my chest literally was bleeding. So take one for the team. Every time I got into the ring with Tommy, I had about 6 or 7 shots of tequila because I knew it was going to be brutal. I mean, Tommy believed everything about wrestling. I mean, he would have been a great MMA fighter. He went on to train back in the day when Solid Gold was big. He trained all the lady boxers and all over the world. He went and trained boxers and wrestlers for Solid Gold. So, but he was a true legitimate badass, and he hurt you when you got in the ring.
Wow. So, in your opinion, Mark, you said you made the transition over to being a manager. What makes a good manager?
You know, to me, a good manager is really somebody that could, you know, you look at guys like Bobby Heenan, Jim Cornette, you know, so many other ones out there. They were amazing speakers. You know, they can say things and piss people off. And they were, I mean, Bobby Heenan to me, you know, was the ultimate in what he did as a manager. I never had a mouthpiece like that. I could talk and if you got me fired up, I could scream a lot and holler a lot. But you know, to me, a good manager was an accent piece to the wrestler. You know, what could you do that made that wrestler look better in the ring? Knowing when it was time to you know, get some heat for yourself and give that wrestler a break. And then again, you know, just being able to talk for that person, because, you know, generally you not in all cases, but most of the time, you know, the guys that I worked with weren't the greatest speakers in the world. I mean, X-Pac was the worst guy in the world on a microphone. So being able to cover what that wrestler was doing, and being able to talk to him. But to me, a good manager was somebody that just knew how to play the crowd and not take anything away from the guy in the ring.
Cool. Good point. I think that's one of the things that at the independent level, we oftentimes see when there's a manager, they don't know that what they're doing is not what it's taking away from the match. And you're being a distraction rather than having the focus on the ring, having the focus on the competitors. So I think that's a skill that's somewhat lacking.
Yeah. And it does lack, because the main focus is on the match. I mean, when the crowd gets low, that's when it's my turn to get high and get the crowd going again, get them booing, getting them pissed off, getting into people's faces. You know, I was always one that it didn't bother me to get right in the audience's face and provoke them and get them loud again. But during the match, if you're getting somebody to turn their attention to you when the match is hot, you're making a big mistake, because you're taking away from the guys that are actually busting their ass inside the ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's my theory.
Well, stepping aside from that for a minute, let's move on to Steel Domain. Bought in the Steel Domain Wrestling out in Minnesota, and it's a prominent promotion, probably most notably for CM Punk, Colt Cabana, Ace Steel, those kind of guys. When and what brought on this partnership with Steel Domain?
You know, Ed Hellyer, so Steel Domain was started by Danny Dominion and Ace Steel. And Ed had made a deal, believe it or not. Ed had St. Paul Championship Wrestling. I knew Ed when I used to work for Windy City Wrestling and a couple other promotions. Ed, before I knew Ed, Ed was at a match where Buddy Roberts legitimately split my head open with a metal chair at the Rosemont in Chicago, Illinois. And soon after that, Ed and I had become friends or got to know each other. And when I stepped away from wrestling, I really stayed away from wrestling. So years go past, and Mick Karch got me to come out to Minnesota and do a show. Adam Pearce, Ace Steel, they were all on the show. And I didn't even know those guys at that time. So I went out, did the show. And of course, after 20 years of not doing shows, the Golden Idol was reborn, and I got it back in my blood, which was a big mistake. So Ed and I got along really great, flawlessly. We were working together. We were both doing, along with Mick Karch, we were both, the three of us were coming up with scripts, writing shows, booking guys, and I just got more and more involved. And then there's a promotion called Primetime Wrestling out of Minneapolis, and they had done a great job building up their audience. He wanted to get out of it, Greg McDonald, and Eddie and I really felt that it would be a shame for that promotion to just go away. So we made him an offer. We bought it. We bought his ring. That's primarily what we paid for. We turned around, sold the ring right away. We didn't want anything to do with him, and formed our partnership. And that's about, I think, about 5 years ago now. So, yeah, so that's what got me back into it, really, and got me into ownership of the promotion.
All right. Yeah, one thing I wanted to touch on is I think your guys' situation, your and Ed's situation, is a unique situation to where, as in, you're actually in Ohio. You live in Ohio, and he's out in Minnesota where the promotion is. Yep. And I know, like I say, you work with us at New Ohio, and we've done partnership stuff together. And when it's time for Minnesota events to happen, you fly to Minnesota, you know, handle your business on the weekends there, and then you're back home in Ohio, you know, running your businesses here. And it's a unique situation where, one, it's a partnership promotion. You usually don't see a lot of that, because people can't seem to get along and they break apart and they start their own groups. So the legit partnership between you two is unique, you know, number one. Number two, the long distance partnership. How does that work? And do you think that benefits you guys, or is it like a disservice to the promotion?
No, I mean, you know what? We talk so much, even though we're not running. Ed and I will still talk two or three times a week. We're incredible friends. Our wives are friends. You know, it works out. Ed knows whether it's a win, lose, or draw financially, I'm going to be there. You know, we've had it happen many times where I've burnt up points or I've just paid for an airline ticket. I mean, that's our, that's our commitment. You know, our commitment is we can communicate all week long on the phone. Ed and I have really a very unique business relationship. And you know, even though we don't do everything together, you know, it's like a relationship with you, Donnie. I mean, we can sit down and plan a show, talk about a show, what we need to do, and or how we want to do it before this COVID thing, the things that we had been talking about we want to do, and it's pretty flawless, and there's an understanding that, you know, how things are going to happen, what we're going to do, and go from there. So I think, you know, yes, you don't see a lot of it, but I think there's a lot of, you know, Mark Kovals, Donnie Hoovers, you know, Ed Helliers out there that show that it can be done, because the egos just aren't in the way. It's not an ego thing. It's about pulling off a good show and getting it done. And you know, I think on our end we show that with the Arnold, you know. I mean, it costs money that, you know, that you lost because we didn't have the Arnold. It lost money because I did things that I thought would enhance the Arnold. And in the end, what did we say when we couldn't do it? Oh, well, we'll come back next year.
Yeah, you know, that's all we can do.
Right. So I think in this business, it's tough to find people like that. I think it's tough to find people that don't have massive egos. But I think those people, and again, I liken it to you and Ed, they're still out there, and we can pull off anything that we need to pull off. And that's exactly what Ed and I do. We cover for each other. That's it.
Now, do you guys have certain job roles that you do? Like, you know, he handles one thing and you handle another thing, or do you guys just like do it all together, or how does that work?
We primarily do it all together. We run into, you know, probably our biggest issue will be, Ed will say, we need another guy, and maybe I'm working on it. And next thing you know, I'll look on our back page on Facebook, and Ed will say, tell everybody that he booked somebody, or I'll find out a week later. I'm like, dude, why didn't you tell me that? You know, so you know, those are the little ins and outs. But as far as any major decision, there literally is nothing that we don't work on together. And I think that is our strength. I mean, booking a guy here or there and not, you know, forgetting to say something is minor. Being able to communicate, and we know what each other is doing through every step, and we agree or we disagree. We'll argue about it, and sometimes they'll say you're right, sometimes I'll say he's right, but the communication is definitely there.
Would you say that's the number one attribute to having a successful promotion is communication?
Oh, 100%. If you can't communicate, then you can't agree on things. You know, the day of a show, Ed and I will meet at the building at 1 o'clock, and then we'll go to lunch, and then we'll go to the building. So if we're at the building by 1 o'clock, you know, guys start coming in around 3 o'clock. I mean, and as each guy comes in, we take our guys and we sit down. You know, it's either Mick Karch or myself. We give them the layout. We tell them what's happening. And we leave them alone from there. So, you know, Ed doesn't step on our feet. What's happening behind the scenes and for TV, he'll give his suggestions. We'll talk about it. We don't bug him with what's happening in the front of the house. And yeah, it literally just works that well.
That's cool. Being a manager, I'm going to go back to that for a minute. You probably have worked with lots of talent, and can you maybe just give us a little insight into when you see a new talent, what do you look for in that talent?
I'm sorry, there was noise behind me.
No problem. When you see like a new wrestler, when you see a new talent, what do you notice most about that individual? Is there a key thing that you look at first, like physique, or do you look at charisma first, or does it vary based on, you know, person to person?
You know what? we get a lot of new kids out of Ken Anderson's Pro Wrestling Academy. And, you know, there's a couple that stick out to me. Brandon Gore, big, looks good, good personality, works well in the ring, understands, you know, the art of wrestling. So that sticks out to me. The next thing, which you know, is one of the things I love, you know, you need guys that can wrestle good. But there's also those guys that are just, they're good wrestlers, but they have an amazing personality. We have a guy, he went by the system, and he played the violin. And he was great on the microphone. Not the biggest guy, but his personality and what he did in the ring and the entertainment factor was just amazing. So I, you know, I try to look at everything. I mean, how do they lace their boots? Do they tuck the strings in? You know, do they have a good looking outfit? Does everything match? You know, things that I know the audience is going to look at and say, wow, that guy. You know, it's not, today's world is so different. You know, back in the old day, you look at a guy like Jerry Blackwell, that was this big, fat, huge guy, and looked like crap in the ring, but he was an amazing wrestler, mm-hmm. you know, and he was so talented. Or, you know, God rest his soul, Kamala, who just passed away. I mean, that guy, how big was he that could come off the top rope and fly through the air? Those were amazing guys. So you look at so many different things, you know. But I like the guys that can entertain the audience. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's 75% of wrestling. Can you entertain mm-hmm. them and keep the audience occupied?
Yep.
I will admit that's the first time I've ever heard anybody say that you look for people that tuck their laces into their boots. I've honestly never heard anybody say that
before. I was taken back by that as well.
Yeah.
Because if you went to school in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and before, the first thing, you know, when I started with Eddie Sharkey, the first thing that he taught you was how to dress and how to put on your boots and how to look professional. And one of the most important things that he used to say is you had to tuck your shoelaces back into your boots. And if you look at guys, you know, if you look at Shawn Michaels and you look at, you know, guys that all came in the early 90s and 80s, you know, you look at Ric Flair and those guys, look at where their laces are. You don't see them hanging out. They used to say that's a hazard. If you didn't wear your pads right, it wasn't right. And if you wore, you know, we weren't allowed to wear, if you got in the ring with a pair of tennis shoes, Eddie Sharkey would charge you an extra $500 for that day and send you home and not let you come back until you paid him. You know, I mean, it was a whole different world. So, but that's how we were taught. We were literally taught how to lace our boots.
You ever see anybody in the locker room with their laces out and you just want to say, hey, tuck your laces in, asshole?
all the time. It makes me insane. I hate seeing, you know, I mean, again, it depends on the character, you know, but I mean, I used to be 400 pounds, you know, a sloppy guy, you know, not dressed right, not clean, you know, not getting in the ring the right way. That used to make me insane. Mm-hmm. I think it's all important because you're protecting the sport, and you know, you don't see a football player go out on the football field with no helmet on. I mean, you just got to do things the right way, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
When you trained with Eddie, could I ask, the infamous story always was that he had a very small training school, and you had a wall on one side of the ring. So you would run the ropes. If you ran like this way, you would run into the wall possibly. Was that still the same setup, and is that accurate?
Yeah, so we, you know, when I went to Eddie's camp, he had moved from the old building, and the new building, Ron Peterson, who was a pretty well-known boxing promoter in Minnesota, he was our ring crew as well. We worked out in his gym. We were on Hennepin Avenue. Right in the heart of Uptown, and our school was had a little bit more room in it, but yes, on one side of the ring, it was close enough to the wall that a big guy like me at 400 pounds, if I ran the ropes that way, I was definitely hitting a brick wall. Yep.
I'd have paid to see that.
Well, and the other thing is, Eddie Sharkey, as great of a trainer was that he was, Eddie never got in the ring and trained you. It literally was all the guys. You went to Eddie's camp not because it was you were going to get this amazing training. You went to Eddie Sharkey's camp because you knew who came out of it, and your training was going to be okay, but you were really going to learn when you started working on the road with them.
Okay. You have any interesting road stories?
Oh.
Ones that you feel comfortable sharing. Let's put that little asterisk next to it.
Probably one of my favorite stories. I'm still friends with Eddie today. And Eddie is an amazing character. Eddie used to love to dine and dash. So we were going to North Dakota or somewhere. And in the car, I was driving. It was me, Eddie, Adnan LKC, and I think it was either Charlie Norris or Ricky Rice from the top. It was Ricky Rice and Derek Dukes as a tag team back for the AWA. I think Ricky was with us. Well, we got to the restaurant in the middle of nowhere, and we ate. And Eddie used to – the trick was Eddie used to take the receipt and he put it in his hand. And we'd walk outside and go to the car. Well, if they stopped him, he'd say, oh, my God, I forgot all about it. I was a truck stop. I was looking at the hats and all this. I'm an old man. So we get outside and we're like, where the hell? What's going on here? We're missing somebody. We get in the car. We said, screw it, because the manager came outside. Adnan comes out of the bathroom, gets outside, and he's screaming, you mother, son of a bitch, you leave me behind. So Adnan got stuck paying the bill. And anybody that knows Adnan, I love him to death, and we're still great friends. But, man, that man can make pennies stretch like nobody's business. And he was pissed. So that's the cleanest, easiest story that I could tell you. But, you know, to sum up stories of the road, we had, like I said, it was a young group. You know, Ricky Rice, Derek Dukes, Charlie Norris. Charlie went on to wrestle with Sam Houston as a tag team. And Charlie was a legit Indian. But, you know, Sean and Jerry Lynn and all. And it was just a really fun group of guys. So whether you were out drinking or doing whatever, nobody ever got arrested. Nobody got in trouble. We probably dragged a few bodies home back to the hotel at night. But it literally was a really great group of guys. I mean, even if Baron was on the road or Chris Markoff or Adnan, they were just really good. It was, again, different world. They were just pranksters, but good people.
When you say drag bodies back to the hotel, it's because they were intoxicated, not because they had died. And sadly, given some revelations over the last couple of weeks, we probably need to state that, right? I mean,
yes, we never lost anybody to anything except for maybe passed out from something else.
Sure, there you go. Just if you had said that 3 weeks ago, no problem. But we might need to clarify now.
Yes, thank you for clarifying.
You know, I've got to say, Mark, that you've brought up a lot of names that just bring me back to my childhood. Going back to Baron von Raschke and Ken Patera and Nick Bockwinkel. You've dealt with a lot of these guys. How did you feel? I mean, who was the best on the mic when you were working with them?
You know, I'm very partial to Adnan. Our relationship, we were friends before wrestling and after wrestling. I always loved Adnan because, you know, being originally from Baghdad, Iraq, and the accent and when he tried to speak English, the words were hilarious. But Nick Bockwinkel, you know, Nick Bockwinkel was always amazing. But guys that I consistently worked with, I loved when Baron would get on the mic. I think he was amazing. Ken Patera, you know, he had an amazing way about himself, you know, talking to a crowd. But I would probably say that back in that time, I would say my top two probably would have been Baron and, oh man, Nick, I only worked with a few times. I would really say Baron and probably Patera. I mean, Patera got loud and obnoxious and Jim Bronzell. Jim Bronzell as a single wrestler, you know, he was very subdued, but his interviews were very, very solid.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, but again, it was a different interview back then. I mean, sure. Those guys were all characters, you know. I mean, they didn't have to do – it wasn't like, you know, hearing The Rock or John Cena today, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So what would you do if you came across some new talent that was really good in the ring but just had zero mic skills?
You know, there are a lot of guys out there that unfortunately never, you know, are never going to have great mic skills. But guys that you see potential in, just really try to work with them and try to help them to understand what the focus is. You know, I mean, all the interviews aren't pre-scripted. Did I lose you guys?
No, you just, your video.
We got audio.
Off.
We don't have video, but we got audio.
Okay, I'll get it back. Hang on. Sorry.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, I think it's just more coaching, talking to them, making them talk on the microphone, and then when they're done, you know, critiquing them and letting them know, you know, it needs to be a little bit different and what might enhance that. So, but keeping them off the microphone is a big mistake.
Okay.
Is the art of managing dying? Because, I mean, I don't think nowadays we have as many managers as we did when I was a fan growing up and whatnot. You know, there's no Bobby Heenan, there's no Jimmy Hart's or Gary Hart or Adnan. You know, it seems like we're getting to a point now in wrestling where a manager's kind of not around.
Yeah, it is dead. Unless it's the independent scene. It's 100% dead, and I'm glad it still exists out there on the independent circuit. But it's definitely a lost art and a shame, because I think in the days of Bobby Heenan and those guys, you know, it was a great enhancement tool. So, you know, I don't watch a lot of wrestling anymore, but I did watch. Oh, what was I watching? What's a new one? AEW.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see Tully Blanchard. It's nice to see Arn Anderson and Jake Roberts. I think that that's a smart move for them, and I think it's a cool move because I I'm a mic guy. I don't always want to watch the wrestling, but I want to hear what everybody's saying. So I think it's fun to see some of that back. WWE, you know, I think it's I get a big kick out of Paul Heyman, so of course if he's on, you know, that seems fun to me. And then using some of the wrestlers to come out, you know, once in a while, I think is good. But yeah, it's a whole lost deal.
Can I put you on the spot? Is there any managers on the indie scene that you really, really appreciate?
You know, I don't work with a whole lot of them anymore. Okay. Years ago, there definitely was. As far as today, other than seeing them on Facebook or meeting them at Cauliflower Alley, you know, there's a guy, I can't remember his name. There's a guy out of Chicago that I think is pretty good. There's a guy that works for Herb Abrams out of St. Louis. Travis Cook, I think is his name. He's pretty talented.
other than that, I just don't watch as much of it as I used to. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to tell. Locally here, there used to be a guy that did it, Bobby Olsen. Bobby was a good little talent. I worked with him a couple times for the promotion that Chris Ledbetter and TJ own. I can't remember the name of it, down in Middletown. But
LSC.
Yes, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so not a whole lot. I don't really know. Does Big Tom have any managers up there? I don't really remember ever seeing any, but
he's got Ripper okay. Blackheart.
Yeah, and I don't really know him. It's tough to tell. I get a kick out of I don't know if she still does it, but Onyx would bring his daughter out. And I thought that was that was pretty neat. Whether she was a great manager or not, but just nice that he involved her. So fun stuff like that I think is cool. But yeah, nobody that really sticks out that I know of anymore.
Cool. Did you have anything you wanted to ask Jim?
Well, I pretty much asked it. I mean, he answered the question I had. Was the reason I asked about Mike and new talent and the mic is my daughter. She's like I said, she's been training with Cody Hawk.
Yep.
Right now she's really just waiting for things to blow over so she can make her debut, but she's scared to death of the microphone.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know what? A lot of people, I mean, even as many years as I've done it, I think anybody will tell you, if I'm put on the spot, I always love a great lead man on the microphone. Mick Karch was one of those guys, and Ken Resnick, that were great on the microphone to draw you out. My best interviews are with the two of them because they knew the questions to ask and how to keep you going. So to me, my best stuff was, if we use New Ohio Wrestling, we were out at that soccer thing, and it was a deal with Onyx, and something about I was going to get in the ring with Onyx and I blew up and whatever, those are the hot spots and it makes it easy. But if you're just doing it and you're put on the spot, I mean, hell, I'll do one to send up to Minnesota and I can sit in my kitchen and do it 20 times. I mean, it's not easy. Right. But I think, she's at a great camp, and I should say that because Cody, I love Cody Hawk, and I've used him on a couple shows that I've done. He's got a great camp, and Cody's not bad on the mic, and hopefully he's training them on that. So,
well, he definitely is. It's just getting her over that hump, really. I mean, her dad doesn't have a problem being on a mic. I've been on a mic all my life.
Yeah,
she just I'm trying to coach her myself, and she's just, you got to get over that fear. Just be yourself, be your character, and everything will flow.
Well, Eddie Sharkey used to make us do, Eddie used to say, go home to your basement or your garage and just stand there with a broomstick or whatever and just keep barking at it. Keep talking. He used to have us put out the old VHS cameras and say, just listen to yourself or record yourself and listen to it. So I think it's things people get over. But it's definitely something you have to learn. So
sure.
And get comfortable with.
I'll keep coaching her until she either gives up or breaks through.
yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure she'll get it. It's like a light switch. Once it turns on, then you're going to say, damn, what did I do? She won't shut the hell up.
Well, she does that when she's not on the mic anyway, but.
Right. If she's a natural born talker, it will hit her.
Yeah, I would say, well, with her haunt acting, she's a cue line actor, isn't she, or is she a scene actor?
She's done cue line work, yes.
Okay, I mean, she's got to constantly talk and improv out there, so it shouldn't be too hard of a transition if you think about it.
Problem was the character didn't speak.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Well, see, then she just needs a manager. There you go. Why do you think I always had a manager a lot of the time? My mic work sucked.
I keep telling her I'm going to be your manager if she doesn't straighten up.
There you go. Perfect. And that might be the answer. Maybe when she starts getting in the ring, she has a manager with her to keep coaching her along. So that's, that's certainly something that definitely helps.
Okay.
So.
Some good food for thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, X-Pac couldn't, or back in that day, it was 1-2-3 kid. He couldn't talk. That's why I was always with him, and he couldn't talk. I mean, he was horrible, and you listen to him today, you would never know that. I mean, he worked hard to become a solid talker in the ring.
Oh yeah, you can't shut him up now. So.
Amazing. So.
Excellent. Guys, anything else for Mark?
I don't know.
Just a piece of advice. We usually narrow it down to what you're familiar with, so we'll stick with manager role. Just a piece of advice for managers out there.
Yeah, again, it's the same thing I say all the time. Learn your role and know your role. You're not the guy in the ring. Accent the talent in the ring. Don't take away from them. You're not, you become your own star by what you do and the way you behave. Don't take away from the talent in the ring. Just know how to know when to use your talent and do it right.
So you're like a supporting character.
That's right. That's right. My job is to support the guy in the ring, take some heat off him, choke the guy, feed him to me. I get a little bit of heat. Get the crowd back up and rolling. Talk on when the match is over. Do the interviews, but let the guys in the ring have their high spots. You get one once in a while with a choke or a kick or, something dirty, brass knuckles or a chain or whatever it may be, but in the ring until they're ready to use you. You're an asset. That's it.
Okay. So Mark. You got any social media things where people can find out more about the Golden Idol and Steel Domain, that type of thing?
Yeah, you can. Steel Domain Wrestling is on Facebook. We have I've got the Golden Idol Mark Koval Facebook page. More people, I think, friend me on Facebook because they're more interested with your personal life than they are with everything else. They want to know everything about you. But yeah, I mean, I generally don't turn anybody away. I think it's all fun. And yeah, I love the wrestling fans to speak up and send messages and it's all good.
All right. Cool. Well, anything else, guys?
No, I've got some good advice out of him and everything. I just need to know when the next time I'm getting my free dinner, and we'll get that planned.
we definitely need to get together, so let's do it as soon as I get back from my trip this coming week. And I miss you and Terry. So we have a lot of things to talk about for 2021, and we still got a lot of T-shirts to sell.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm definitely looking forward to meeting you in person, Mark. Hopefully sometime in 2021, hopefully at the Arnold.
Yeah.
That'll become a reality. For Donnie and John, with our special guest, Mark Koval, I am Meat Hook Jim. This is the Wrestle Horror Podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next show.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets. Facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram @WrestleHorror, Twitter @WrestleHorror, on our YouTube channel, The Wrestle Horror Channel. Also, you can find us at www.WrestleHorror.com.